And now,
the definition. Definition.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Vymir Deese. And this is a little introduction to the coming up episode. I do talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I want you guys to prepare for that. It's different than what you think. As you know, I never go the traditional way, so prepare yourself for that. It's going to be interesting. I think you'll really appreciate it. But I do want to talk about something. Progressives, you're getting a little giddy about this, saying that this backfired on Elizabeth Warren, her concept of charging Bernie Sanders with sexism, that it backfired. I want to warn you against that giddiness. A couple of years ago, I used to talk with this man who, very, very brilliant man. I was so lucky to have him in my life. And he really helped me mature politically in my understanding of people's attitudes when it came to politics and the underlying motives that would often drive people to vote specific ways. And there's something that he told me that I never forgot. When it came to politics and suburban white women, something he told me. He told me this bit of information after the Parkland shooting. When we were talking about the Parkland shooting, this, by the way, and I feel like I need to give this context. This man was black. He was actually what most people call mulatto, but he was black. And I feel like I need to give that context because it's a great contribution from my ancestors that I ran across this man. But when we were talking about the Parkland shooting, he said to me, "Oh, this is not going to be good for GOP, for the GOP." And I go, "Well, of course not, because they're big gun nuts and everything like that." And he goes, no. He goes, "If this was in an inner city, if this was, a country high school, that'd be fine. But he goes, "Watch what happens in the next 2 weeks. Watch how quick they suddenly pass legislation to appease these people." He goes, "Because that's where your power is." And sure enough, next couple of weeks, man, GOP all across Florida was, "Yo, we need to get on this, we need to do this, we need to do that, let's get it done." And he explained to me why this was the case. He said, the problem with most women in the country who are not suburban mothers is they talk a lot. He wasn't criticizing them, he just was telling me a truth. He goes, "When it comes to politics, a lot of women do a lot of talking. But when it comes to the suburbs, the mothers don't say anything. Mm-mm. You know what they feel on the day of election. You know what they feel on the day that the election is held. Because they march en masse into the polling station and they make their thoughts known. And what these Republicans understood in Florida was that the shooting happened in the worst district for them. Because it wasn't just about one district. It wasn't just about one school. It was about every school in the state that resembled Parkland. I've never forgot that. Ever. Elizabeth Warren, ladies and gentlemen, wasn't aiming at every woman. She wasn't aiming at every woman. She was aiming at a specific group of women. It is the same group of women whom in 2015, on the heels of Black Lives Matter protests expanding across the country, when Black Lives Matter's representatives interrupted Netroots Nation, these progressive suburban mothers were heard mumbling about how these people were animals And they were just like those folks in Ferguson. Progressives do not understand they own people. They don't. Plus, they don't tend to understand the demographic mind of the people who they're trying to reach. Elizabeth Warren wasn't even trying for the majority of black and Hispanic women. No. Because the first two states that she got to worry about, they barely got them people in those states. No. She was targeting suburban, white, bred mothers whom are angry for various reasons and may truthfully want to see a woman be president far more than they care about the policy prescriptions of that woman. That's what she was aiming for. Will it work? I don't know. But this giddiness, you guys need to lose that. You need to lose that because you're fanning the flames. I'm not saying don't talk about it. I'm saying talk about it with respect. Talk about it in a constructive manner. Talk about it in a constructive manner. Or else you will be surprised in a couple of weeks. Bernie Sanders goes down to defeat. Comes in a strong number two position behind Elizabeth Warren, who is carried to victory by caucus goers from these caucus goers who come from these suburban enclaves. And you know, I kind of feel stupid that it took me to hear it from him to tell me this thing, because I should know. Democrats have been dog whistling to these suburban women for decades. Decades. Anyway, here I'm going to end this section, and we're going to actually get into the beginning of the program. This is your brother, Bob Rudy.
Team Warren is on the attack. Team Warren is on the attack. There is a new pity me attack that is being used against Sanders. Strangely enough, I don't necessarily know if this attack has legs because the people who they're going to energize are not necessarily the people who, honestly, this attack is only going to piss people off that she needs to vote for her, not necessarily energize those people. There is a section of, strangely and ironically, white liberal elite that will feed into this. But for the most part, there's been an attack leveled at Sanders. What this basically boils down to is, supposedly, Sanders or his campaign has instructed his volunteers to go out and say bad things about Warren. Politico runs the story. Bernie campaign slams Warren as candidate of the elite. Sanders' campaign has begun to stealthily attack Warren as a candidate of the upper crust who could not expand the Democratic base in the election, according to talking points his campaign is using to sway voters and obtained by Politico. Then Strip instructs Sanders' volunteers to tell voters leading towards the Massachusetts senator that the people who support her are highly educated, more affluent people who are going to show up at the Democrats for Democratic voters no matter what, and that she's bringing no new bases into the Democratic Party. Now, if that part is true, nothing said would be false. If you're looking at the polling, the trend line is she tends to bring in the more affluent, more elite Democratic voters who would, yes, vote for Democrats regardless. So it's not so much that what the document is saying is false. This entire story by Politico is just a car crash. These two people, for the most part, these two camps, have had a non-compete contract of sorts, meaning, you know, whether it was Well, it was just clear that these two camps would not attack each other. To the chagrin of many of people in those camps, by the way, when Warren was riding in the polls, Sanders supporters were freaking out, saying, you gotta hit her, you gotta hit her. Same thing with Warren supporters. But the camps themselves, for the most part, had a non-compete in regards to the way they interact with one another. So Politico, hey, look at this car crash. Now these two people are fighting. Politico carries the story. The Hill carries the story. CNN carries the story. CNN gets so invested, CNN ups the ante in the story and says, Sanders told Warren in a meeting that a woman can't win. This is where they are going with this. And for Warren, what do you think Warren is going to do about this? Warren, of course, is going to lean into it. The question becomes whether or not the story is true. And there are a few questions. Is it true? Does it have legs? Who is it aimed at? Who is it going to piss off? Are these the people that you need to get your votes? Why are they doing it now? Was Warren the originator of this, seeing as she's the only one that profits from this? There are a lot of questions to be asked. This is the explanation of all of this nonsense, because all of it is just BS. It's desperate BS. Welcome to the soapbox. My name is Jamal Thomas. This is the Progressive Soapbox. Guys, if you dig this content, please like, share, subscribe. You can always support. This content is brought to you by you, so we like to say even a dollar helps. So the narrative goes out. Bernie Sanders is instructing his campaign to go after Elizabeth Warren. The Hill covers it. Politico covers it. CNN covers it. CNN covers it and ups the ante to not just attack Warren. By the way, everything said in that was substantive. It wasn't smearing her. It was going after the differences in policy prescriptions. But Warren herself leans in and her campaign leans in.
I was disappointed to hear that Bernie is sending his volunteers out to trash me. Bernie knows me and has known me for a long time. He knows who I am, where I come from, what I have worked on and fought for, and the coalition and grassroots movement we're trying to build. Democrats want to win. In 2020, we all saw the impact of factionalism in 2016, and we can't have a repeat of that. Democrats need to unite our party, and that means pulling in all parts of the Democratic coalition. It means building a grassroots movement with face-to-face conversations with people who door knock. It means getting a positive message out to people. That's how we beat Donald Trump.
Here's the catch. Here's the catch. She starts this off saying, Bernie knows me. Yes, but that also means that you know Sanders. And does this sound like something that a person that you know, that you call a friend of yours, would do? If this does not sound like something a friend of yours would do, then you are out here playing politics. Warren's campaign leans into this. The truth of the matter is, what actually happened, one of the volunteers explains, a random user who's only ever played, you can say it for yourself. Bernie Sanders' volunteer hits back. Here's what actually happened. A random user who's only ever posted once before posted that document in the Sanders volunteer Slack group. A moderator promptly removed the document and stated it was not the campaign source. All of these networks have been running with this very particular story, never asking the question of, does this make logical sense? Does this sound like Bernie Sanders? And have they validated the story that they're running with? The moderator comes in and says, this is not a campaign source, and promptly removed the document, meaning this is not something that the Sanders campaign has pushed. And before even getting to this point, I said, that doesn't even sound like Sanders. The media has a financial incentive and to promote a story like this because the story is a car crash. Again, in that political story, it was less about whether or not it was true and more about the fact that it was just taking place in the first place. Warren campaign leans into it. Warren campaign not just leans into it, but also puts out a mailer. Puts out a mailer right here. Last night, we got some disappointing news. It's right. What Bernie campaign thinks says about you. What Sanders campaign says about you. Bernie Sanders campaign is instructing volunteers to dismiss our broad-based inclusion campaign by saying people who support Elizabeth Warren are highly educated and more affluent people. Fact of the matter is, I'm sorry, they just are. But on top of they just are, what political reported was nonsense. And if you were indeed a friend of Sanders, you would have known that that was nonsense.
Is there, do you have a feeling, do you feel like there's Elizabeth Warren-specific advice coming from where you come from with the issues that you care about and the people who you have so much influence with because of the way you talk about these issues? Do you have a prescription for how the Democratic Party's primary should wrap up? Senator Sanders has a rally tonight in D.C. He's going to compete in the D.C. primary. He says he's going right through to the convention. We don't know exactly what that means, but he was talking tonight at this rally. He said, you know, when I am president, I'm going to use my executive authority. I mean, do you have a prescription for how this primary should end?
Look, I think that it's clear now that we need to start thinking about all of us together. And we need to think about the difference between us and the difference and the Republicans. Mm. That's for me what the heart of this is about. But, you know, I want to add another part to this because I think it really matters here. And I like our talking back and forth, but I just want to be sure I get this on the table and get it on the table early. Mm. Hillary Clinton won. And she won because she's a fighter. She's out there. She's tough. And I think this is what we need. Look at who she is.
Hillary Clinton is what we need. This is Elizabeth Warren, Rachel Maddow, effectively telling Bernie Sanders to get out the race, Clinton won. The catch here is Warren was never going to be on Team Sanders. You had a lot of us, me included, who thought, well, she has to endorse Sanders. She's ideologically closest to him, so all things being equal, she would have to endorse Sanders. But Warren didn't endorse Sanders. The catch here is there was a secret deal going all the way back to 2013 where senators, including Elizabeth Warren, said that they will not run. Not to mention, they will give their fealty and allegiance to Hillary Clinton. And I'm using the term secret letter because ABC News literally uses the term in a secret letter. All the female Democratic senators signed a secret letter to Hillary Clinton early this year, encouraging her to run for president. A letter includes Elizabeth Warren. So, this scene with Rachel Maddow, where Elizabeth Warren and Maddow talks about how she waited until everything was settled and everything else, nonsense. Her support had already been given to Clinton. Listen to this. For the moment, this was the Democratic debate last night.
I didn't say it. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did.
Now, Sanders is talking about here, Warren campaign leaks information saying to CNN 2 days before the debate, knowing that it will be brought up in a debate so Warren can make this argument about a woman can win in the election. She uses her friend as a prop in order to make this very specific argument, putting a knife in him, trying to make it look like he's vaguely sexist. And that the problem with women, the Bernie bro, all that stuff. She's feeding into that for her own political ambitions. She's been failing miserably in the polls, dropping 10, 15% in somebody, or 10, 12% in many of these polls. And because of such, she's desperate in this Hail Mary pass. The thing I want to focus on, though, is what Sanders just said. I went to Warren in 2015 and deferred to her. I would have preferred her to run, but since she didn't run, I decided to run. Again, in a secret letter to Hillary Clinton, Warren had already given her allegiance and already given her support to Clinton, making it clear that she wouldn't run. Meaning, Sanders going to her was going to her in vain. And whether or not she brought up the fact that she had this secret meeting with Clinton where she signed a letter saying I'll give my support or not is unclear on whether or not that came up in the conversation. Between the two, my only point is Sanders went to her in vain in 2015. Here's the catch. Why did Warren go to Sanders in 2018? Nobody asked that. They just take it as, well, she went to him. He's a friend. But why? Why did she go to him with specifically talking about this stuff? Now, some people could say it was a strategy session. Yeah, in an overt sense, but certainly she had her reasons as to going. And that's what I want to talk about, because that seems to be the thing that people are ignoring or don't all that much care about. And I find that to be extremely interesting. Welcome to the Soapbox. My name is Jamal Thomas. This is the Progressive Soapbox. Sanders goes to Warren in 2015. They try to get Warren to run. Warren refuses. She then turns around and backs Clinton. Warren in 2018 goes to Sanders. Now, this was reported by the New York Times, meaning it was reported early on. It's mysterious timing, and mysterious, I don't mean not mysterious at all. There was debate coming up. This was the issue she wanted to talk about. She used her friend in the private conversation with her quote-unquote friend as political opposition research to attack her friend, but to talk about the issue of women beating Trump and whether or not a woman could win. The key point, though, that I want to point out is she goes to Sanders in 2018 to have a conversation with him. Notice something that is also said. Sanders at one point in the Washington Post says it would be ludicrous after me telling her to run in 2015 that I didn't think a woman could win. That's not what I said to her. But she goes to him in 2018. And there's this odd quirk that she asks him whether or not a woman could win. Why would you ask that question if you fervently believe that a woman could win? The only reason you would ask the question is you yourself had doubts. That is not something that the media brings up. They just bring up this notion that Sanders supposed, well, some media, it's CNN anyway, that Sanders went this route. It would be ludicrous for me to say that a woman couldn't win after trying to get her to run in 2015. It would be absurd. It wouldn't make sense. But the fact is, Warren is the one that asked that question. Why did she go to Sanders? Why? Is it a strategy session? Or did she go to Sanders to indicate to him, I will be running for president? Now, in the reporting, they said that nobody pushed the other person, nor did anybody try to stop the other person from running. But it became clear that Sanders knew that what she was talking about was her. Do you think a woman, when she's talking about her, he fully understood that she was talking about her. That entire meeting was to get across to him, I, Elizabeth Warren, is running for president. You tried to get me to run in 2015. I decided not to run. I had a deal with Clinton that I signed in blood. So I couldn't run in 2015, but now I am trying to get across to you in this meeting in 2018 that I, Elizabeth Warren, will be running for president. So you, Bernie Sanders, don't have to. Meaning the entire point of this meeting was essentially a rerun of the 2015 meeting, with the difference being Warren went to Sanders as opposed to Sanders going to Warren. Warren, in this case, was trying to make it clear, I am running in 2020, whether she used those words or not, it became clear. This was an indication to Sanders, I'm running, you don't have to. Meaning if everything is still true from 2015, if all of the rules are still exactly the same and you wanted me to run so you didn't have to, all right, I'm giving you the indication right now for 2018 that I'm doing that so you don't have to. Too late. Too late. Not only did you not support me, not only did you try to tell me to get out of the race, not only did you back Clinton, but there's a secondary factor that I built this. I built this. I'm the one who took the hits. I'm the one who created the space. I'm the one who decided to run in 2016 when you chose not to and signed your name in blood to back Clinton. And I can show you that video with Rachel Maddow where you're saying all these things about Clinton, talking about, you know, we need a new future and everything else as if that woman was going to do that. I built this. I built this. That's his point. I am the one that created this space, the Medicare for all, the expansion of schools, the pulling back on these wars. I created this space, the wealth tax, the taxes on the rich, the antagonisms towards the billionaire class. I built this. And I built this at a time where they said this was impossible to do, that you couldn't run a race in this particular way, that the public wouldn't be on board for these items. I built this in the face of all sorts of criticism. I built this. And just like Sanders saying, I don't want Joe Biden to take it, or at the very least getting across behind the scenes, I don't want Joe Biden to take it because I built it. The same thing would remain true for Elizabeth Warren also. I tried to get you to run, you didn't run. I created a movement, a political revolution. I created all, I was the one that took the hit in order to make this work. I want to bring it to conclusion. So he runs. Now, I just want to make the very particular point, though. Warren's meeting with him, most likely, at least I strongly suspect, nobody ever asked this question. Did you go to him almost as a rerun of 2015 because you wanted to get across to him that you were running and so that he didn't have to? I think that's where this meets. I think that's what this is.
All right. So, Crystal, I was in Sao Paulo. I'm interviewing a guy. This month is intense. Next week, Cornel West, right? Lula and Cornel West. These are two big deals to me. And I'm also in Brazil. So yeah. I'm not really like super up on my phone. And then I see, before I leave, I see apparently there's some sort of canvassing talking point. We don't know whether or not it's even real. And if it is real, fine. Right. If it isn't real, it's nothing. It's just a truism. Then, you know, a couple of different steps. All of a sudden, actually, can we throw up that Sopranos meme before I throw it to Crystal? Have you seen the Sopranos meme?
I don't know.
I want to show you this because this is my interpretation of what happens. Although the difference is I want to give Paulie Walnuts credit here because Paulie Walnuts actually, at least it was in real time. All right, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, it's in the show outline, so we'll get to it in a second. What the f*** just happened?
You know exactly what just happened.
I mean, it's disgusting, and you've been covering it perfectly.
It's just a blatant political ploy. Throw your friend under the bus for your own gain. That's all it is. It's plain and simple. And you know what's so ironic? I'm glad that you started with the beginning of the week and Elizabeth Warren's feigned outrage. How could you, Bernie, right? How could you have a volunteer script that accurately points out that who is in my coalition, right? And then the very next day, or you leak this thing to CNN that supposedly Bernie Sanders is this massive sexist and told you a woman could never be president. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? And we all can see it's coming down to the wire, only, you know, 2 weeks basically now till Iowa. She's got all these like ex-Clinton apparatchiks that she staffed her team with. And they told her, look, polls aren't looking good. You got to make something happen. And there's this fork in the road, right? She can either go after Joe Biden, who is the front runner, who has a long track record of doing actual harm to women, who in a past life, Elizabeth Warren excoriated for his record. Said you can't claim to be a champion of women in the morning and sell them out in the evening. So I'm paraphrasing, but that was basically what she had to say. And had this great analysis of how, you know, supporting women isn't just about like a few token issues. It's about supporting every aspect of their lives and their humanity and their dignity, as we were just saying. And if you aren't a part of that, if you'd rather serve your corporate masters and the credit card issuers that come from your state, then you are no ally of women. That is literally the message that brought Elizabeth Warren into politics, literally in opposition to Joe Biden. So here she is, right? Coming down to it, you're on one of the biggest stages imaginable. And you can either launch that righteous attack on Joe Biden, who very much could be the nominee, or you could launch this, you know, pack of lies, scurrilous, nasty, personal attack on your supposed friend who you've been buddy-buddy with all year and telling us all that we can't, you know, we can't divide, we can't possibly make any critique or discuss the differences between the two of them.
Definitely don't talk about her voting record.
No, can't
That's
do that.
Horrible.
Can't do that.
Totally evil.
But you, so she has this choice, and she decides to go after her friend and do incredible damage to the progressive movement. And the real look, I think everyone saw through it. Everyone that, you know, was is at all persuadable saw through it. It just looks like the complete political ploy and personal betrayal that it was. But there's an opportunity cost because, as you know, the Sanders team was all they were ramping up to make a major critique of Joe Biden. We were all talking about the Iraq war vote in particular. John Kerry had to get trotted out to defend him on this thing. Still doesn't have any good answer on it.
John Kerry is like, yeah, your effective Iraq answer from 2004.
Right. Exactly.
Let's go.
So this is all queued up. And rather than having a news cycle that's about issues of war and peace and the judgment of a potential commander-in-chief, we have to talk about what was said in a private conversation between two friends over a year ago. How does that affect any voter's life, by the way? Look,
right.
Bernie didn't say what she's like.
Of course not.
Obviously not.
Yes.
But let's say he did. Honestly.
So what?
How many people, how many feminists, after Hillary Clinton lost, talked about the sexism she faced and how that was a contributor to her loss? The natural conclusion from that analysis is it's harder for a woman to win. That is the natural conclusion. And so the other part of this, as a woman that I find, as someone who...
Look at this piece that Matt just pulled up.
Right.
Emily's list from Emily's list.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. Keep going. I just want to underline what you're saying.
The other thing, like, as a woman who, by the way, ran for office and saw a little bit of sexism out there on the trail.
A little bit.
Now, basically, you've made it so we can't even have that discussion, honestly. Like, we can't be open about the realities of running as a woman. It's just, like, so wrong and nasty on every level. It's completely exposed. Like, I saw my old colleague, Joanne Reed, this morning brought in. Did you guys
well,
see
we're going to get to that in a second.
Okay, all right. Let's put up
the Sopranos meme, please. The only thing I want to say as I walk through this is that to Paulie Walnut's credit, at least this is in real time and not 14 months later. But this is the great Pine Barrens episode.
Yes.
This is Warren is Paulie Walnut's. Hey, Bern, I just want to let you know I'm going to run for president. And then Bernie, like, congrats. That's great. Be careful because Trump is a racist, sexist liar. He'll weaponize whatever he can against you. Paulie Wallace to Christopher. You hear that shit? He said a woman could never be president. And that summarizes everything. But I think, except again, at least Paulie just got off of the phone with a bad cell connection.
And it was really cold. Barrens.
And it was really cold and his blood sugar was bad and he wasn't supposed to kill the Russian guy, but maybe the Russian isn't even dead. But the thing is that, I mean, here's what I want to touch on about this though, that really, there's so many things about this that drive me crazy. I mean, one you pointed out is just that it's disgusting on a personal level. And that's sort of like, it, you know, it sucks, it's disgusting, but like, okay, it's politics, I guess. And then the next one is I'm not convinced. I think she does have a back channel to Joe Biden, if I had to guess. And I certainly am not somebody who, well, I've said for a long time, and I used to get a lot of pushback because I would say I'm not, every time people would spin these like fantasy scenarios about them like running together, but against each other or whatever people were cooking up in their heads, I was like, I'm not convinced that. Look, I think if it goes to a broker convention, there's deal making and horse trading and it could go either way. I'm not at all convinced that she would just go to Bernie. I never was.
Why would you think that? I mean, she had a chance to help Bernie last time and she didn't do it. Well, waited around and then, you know, when it was safe, decided to back the person that she thought could make her Treasury Secretary or whatever. Like that to me was the beginning of that is when she decided I'm going to be an establishment player. But that's like the best, most charitable interpretation is that she convinced herself that's the way to have the most influence and impact. But it's the road to hell because ultimately you just keep selling off these pieces of your soul. You can justify just about anything if you think, well, if that will just put me in a position of power, I will be in the position to make these changes and help women and families the way that I know that I can. I mean, I think that's the way the Clintons think about a lot of this stuff.
I think that's true, but I guess, yeah, I think that's all 100% right. And then the other things, it's like, okay, the discourse around her was so policed that, yeah. Like, I couldn't even, like, literally, I mean, because it's just not even worth the battle. But I used to do, you know, I did a bit last year at a live show where it's like, you know, what my fantasy, of course, is that Bernie will do Trump-style rallies because that would be hilarious. And right. He comes out and he's like, you know, wandering Dolezal, everybody. You know, she could have endorsed me, but she didn't because she's wandering Dolezal. But she says she's Native American, but she's not. And she had a Cherokee recipe, but it's a lie. You know, like, I would love to see it.
Yeah,
powwow chow. So, and I was willing to, and what was funny to me was that, like, I do think there was some segment of people that probably hated her irrationally. And then there was another group of people that I actually, even though they still whined about it constantly, I acquiesced to. I was like, okay, let's take a whole bunch of stuff off of the table. Let's not even talk about things that, frankly, like, just objectively, regardless of what I personally think about it, are going to be a problem in a general election.
Yeah.
Like, you can like, you know, uptight and, you know, like, sort of, you know, tone police everybody in a primary to not talk about her saying she was Native American for decades. And then in a general election, it's going to be a massive fat target. So that was one thing. And then it overlapped with this really concerning thing about progressive politics to me, which is just like people living in a fantasy life. Which is like, ironically, like, I think it's sleazy what she did 100%. But I think for the past over a year, they both should have been respectfully saying,
here's
this is why I think that we, because we're running against each other.
Right.
So people have this like, it's going to be like some movie. And at the end of the Olympics, one of them is going to be hurt. And then they're going to put the arms around each other and walk. It's like, they're running against each other. So if there was this other fantasy world, then Bernie wouldn't be running or she wouldn't be running. They're in conflict. And I guess I mean, one, it's that obviously all of that game playing was always to the benefit of Warren. But I think it also reveals a mindset that is still really fundamentally unserious about acquiring power. And that disturbs me.
Yes. Like, of course she's going to try to win. Of course she's going to try to win. And you're right. I mean, this was ultimately, because it was so ugly and obviously a political ploy, I think it backfired. I don't think this is going to serve her. I don't think it's going to hurt Bernie other than the opportunity cost of not having the focus on Biden, which is real and which is important. But yeah, she and her team, and Pete, we should say too, like, these are people that are playing to win, and right. They will use the tactics that are necessary. It was always obvious to me from the beginning that the progressives who are making the unity argument of, like, let's have a detente, let's not critique each other, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they wanted to spin this narrative where Bernie and Warren are just the same,
right.
Except she's a woman and she's younger, so obviously. We should go with her.
Right.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that was the thing.
Right. It was always the subtext.
But yeah. It was only applied in one direction. Right. On the other hand, you were allowed to go on MSNBC and be like, well, you don't have to be a sexist to vote for Bernie. And he's a, you know, angry and divisive and a grouchy old man and all those things. I like the grouchy old man part personally. But
right. Like his response to Tom Steyer.
What? He was like, yeah, OK.
Yeah. OK, good.
OK. Good.
Yeah. It was awesome. Just total cold shoulder.
Yeah, okay, good. But it was always obvious to me that that whole framing was meant to benefit Warren, because it's true. If you just put them up, if you say, oh, they're exactly the same, except she's a woman and she's younger, yeah, you'd probably go with her.
Right.
But if you're allowed to talk about the very real differences, and I have the same right. Part of, I think, why I have such an emotional response to this thing and had such a hard time getting over it is because of the amount of blowback that I would get
yep.
from talking about, like, okay, where is she really on Medicare for All? And what does this look like? And, you know, is she, what is her theory of change? And how does she view movement politics? Because she's adopting some of the rhetoric, but she hasn't been there for the fights. Like, those are real things. They're not meant to be personal. They're not meant to be ugly. They just are the reality. We talked a lot about their different coalitions, the same as the volunteer call script that got them so upset. And the amount of blowback that I got for that versus now the people are like going to the mat over the right of Elizabeth Warren to smear her longtime friend and great ally of women as sexist is just, you know, it's completely outrageous and hypocritical.
Yeah. And I think it also reveals another problem, which is, and I want to be really, you know, I think this is something I always try to articulate on this show, that, like, I'm not for a second going to confuse the really serious commitment to equity, civil rights, and all of these areas on like actual substantive policy grounds and as public values with like just the toxicity and stupidity of like Twitter games and woke performance art and all of this other stuff, which is repulsive to every category of normal person.
Yes.
And I'll be really clear, by normal, I mean I know transgender people who are not obsessed with politics. I know working class Jewish people. Like, I'm saying if you're not sitting on Twitter and you don't think like, you know, oh my God, like, did you see this new like Hillary Clinton, Elizabeth Warren dragon meme? Then you're probably a normal person. And I think you find like the moralism, the control freakery, the confusion of manners with substance.
Right.
And also, frankly, this, which is like most human beings perceive it as like, wow, that's some really dirty shit to do to somebody who's bent over backwards for you. And only in a world where you're literally viewing things through like pure essentialist identity, which ironically like does dehumanize women, because you're literally just like, well, I mean, women are just like avatars of morality.
Right.
they're definitionally right. And then you get these like embarrassing, terrifying pieces like in the LA Times where that Virginia Heffernan woman, which it's like this, it starts to look like this is like psychopathology. It's not politics.
Well, the part of this that conflated Warren smearing Bernie a sexist with the whole like Me Too, believe women, like they, I mean, I'm just like, what is wrong with you? I don't know if you saw, we played it on our show. Chris Cuomo did this handoff with Don Lemon. He's like, well, we know what happened because we have a woman who told us what happened.
Wow.
It's like, I mean, to trivialize that. And that's how you end up just like destroying an entire worthwhile movement in the Me Too movement. And just for like the people who don't get the difference here, the reason why the inclination should be to believe women when they come forward about sexual assault is because there's no incentive to put that out there. It is almost always just completely destructive to the woman who puts that. Her reputation is dragged through the mud. I mean, it's traumatic. All like, there's no reason to do it. You have no incentive to do it. Whereas with this, she has every incentive to do it. This is politics, and she's trying to win. Of course she did it. Of course this came from her advisors. Who else would it come from? And so the fact that the incentives are all in favor of her lying or embellishing or shading the truth or whatever makes this completely different. Not to mention just, I mean, it's just insane to think that way, but that's how sort of simple some of the analysis of
this. Well, it's Adolf Reed, it's essentialism. And I mean, yeah. It's actually functionally profoundly destructive and antithetical
completely.
To any attempt at progressive politics.
And on the handshake specifically, I thought Nina Turner said it best. She got asked about it. She's like, you just shake your colleague's hand. But that piece in the LA Times, again, it tried to equate it like it was some weird bad boyfriend situation. Just give me a hug, baby. Can't we
come
be
on
friends?
We're all good,
right? It's like,
yeah,
what are,
Bernie,
no, he just wants to shake her hand.
And like, if there is any abused spouse in this dynamic, I think we know who it is.
Somebody's gaslighting.
Yeah, somebody's being gaslit.
Oh,
to the ult, to the max.
Yeah,
but
that piece was insane.
Storm is rising against a privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. This freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your brother, Ryan Deese. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield podcast segment. After watching all of the coverage surrounding the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders debate, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a different view. From Main Street, from small town America. Elizabeth Warren said that Bernie Sanders said that a woman couldn't win versus Donald Trump, supposedly. It's hard for me to believe, seeing who he's been. It's hard for me to believe. But I don't want to talk about Bernie Sanders. I want to talk about small town America. Most of small town America, they are, from a cultural standpoint, not politically, but a cultural standpoint, they're moderate to conservative. And many of them do not believe that a woman should be president. Now, the should is interesting instead of could. Because a woman obviously could be president. You know, the Constitution doesn't say women need not apply here. So they could be president. But the should is important. Now, I'm not basing this off of what I think. I'm basing this off of 30 plus years of listening to conversations, having people say things to me, which I keep hearing repeated over and over and over again. When I say should be president, a lot of people will question why. And I recently listened to a really good book on the Flint water crisis. And there was a word that they tried smearing the doctor who wrote the book. It is an Iraqi female doctor living in America. An immigrant to America who really, you know, if it wasn't for her passion and determination, Flint might have turned out dramatically differently. I mean, it's still bad, but nonetheless. They tried to smear her with a word. Hysterical. Hysterical. She's being hysterical. This is a female who's being hysterical. And obviously, it was a nod to the fact that this is a female and she is trying to rattle a bunch of cages that are owned by white men, and they didn't want that to happen. So they tried to paint her as hysterical. Now, the public didn't fall for it. And the reason why the public didn't fall for it, particularly in Flint, Michigan, is because mothers had been leading the charge in trying to get people to pay attention to the water problems in the first place. Now, by the way, this is not surprising. From a epigenetic standpoint, females are the domestic keepers. I mean, this is a human natural, but this seems to be a human ingrained pattern. Females are the domestic keepers. They keep the home, they keep the community, and they maintain a balance within that home and that community. If there is a problem, the female will be the first one to say something. And it is then the male's job to fix it. Not always, but, you know, there's a long history of this. The problem was is that, you know, you get Neanderthal men who think they know everything and don't want to listen to nobody but their own breath and sounds of their voice, so they don't listen. They forget that females are very, very instrumental in maintaining a society's health. So that wasn't a surprise that she played that role and then forced it through all of the channels so it could get done. It's amazing. Now, that stated, having grown up in a community which was, you know, poorer, I could tell you, females have to be a hardy bunch to go through that. But because of that necessity, you have to have a very fluid personality to be poor, guys. Because you never know what's going to come at you day after day. You don't have time to sometimes, you know, linger in your emotions. So your emotions come out at inappropriate times. But most people don't see that. But because of this hardiness, they could be a little bit over-demanding on their men and demand that men do things that, you know, and when you're poorer, you just don't have the capability of doing. You know, you can't just snap your fingers and make things happen. It's in this context that many men, and I can't just say poor either. I've met many people who are not poor, who have expressed the type of thoughts that I'm going to talk to you about presently. But it's in this context that many people in these small towns don't believe that a woman should be president because of that instability. And in fact, I have had women tell me this. Now, of course, other women, feminists, would tell me, oh, well, that's because they're brainwashed. They don't know any better. No. A lot of these women are incredibly brilliant. And you can tell me all you want that women can be brainwashed, but most men know that that just ain't true. That just ain't true. Women make up their mind, and once a woman has her mind made up, you can brainwash her all you want. That spell will lift. You know, obviously there are people who, you know, can be led astray and what have you, but, you know, these women were strong enough to know what careers they wanted, where they wanted to go, why they wanted to get there, how they wanted to get there, but in talking, particularly 2008, not so much 2016, I heard it in 2016, but 2008, listening to women and men talk about the potential to have a female president. And what they would say was, yeah, you know, I'd be fine with her, you know, 3 weeks out of the month. It's that fourth week that I'd be worried about. Men would say it. Women would say it. Men would say it. Women would say it. Now, obviously, you'd say, well, wait, that's disgusting. That's sexist. And come on, man, that's just horrible. It is a concept that is there. And look, I know why now it's there. Back then, I had no clue. I was just hearing this stuff. So why is it there? It's there because, you know, when you are a busy professional wife, your energy goes into your family. Your energy goes into your career. Your energy goes into living this life, which is just go, 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 go. When you are poor and you're working every day, your energy does go into your family. But that's about it. You go to work, you come home, you cook, you watch TV, maybe you go out periodically. That's it. That's life. It's maddening. It's maddening, especially, you know, you have children, and your children have to go to the doctors, and sending them to the doctors costs money, a lot of money. And so now your energy is going further into your work for less pay. Even with a man at home, and there's a lot of, you know, men get a lot of crap for not being good fathers, but there's a lot of men who are there. And there's also a lot of men who are chased away by women. And I know we ain't supposed to talk about that. All women are, you know, victims, but that's a lie. That's a lie. Okay? There's women who want babies, who get babies, and then chase the men away because they want the baby. I've seen it. I've witnessed it a lot. It's not something that happens 2% of the time. It's not something that happens 20% of the time. It's something that happens quite often. And it is something that has to be dealt with. That a lot of women do not know how to be in relationships, healthy relationships with men. That this is something that is very, very, very evident at this end of the economic spectrum. The same obviously is flipped, and it's true, you know. A lot of men don't know how to be in healthy relationships. And I've had some of those discussions with men, so that's how I know that, you know. But to my original point, because all of this is important. Most of this is stuff that, you know, unless you are down in the trenches, you can't get these numbers. You don't know this. You don't know to look for this if you're a researcher. You know, people do studies about why there aren't two parents at home, and they look at economics and, you know, jail time, criminality, things like that. But they don't look at the personnel. Even some of them will, you know, I've seen a couple of studies where they look at, okay, do both of these parents come from two-parent homes? That does have it, that's an indicator. But the personality traits, we don't tend to talk about those because we don't want to blame the victim. It's not blaming the victim. It's understanding how has your society crafted a new generation of parents. And that's more important than trying to, you know, salvage the emotional health of you know, an imaginary person. Because if you find out that there's a problem with how your society's raising your children, you can actually stop a cataclysm from happening, a catastrophe from happening in the future. So, again, back to the point, though. There is a distrust at this level for women in not only power, but specific power. Okay? So men are not at all, a lot of men are not at all uncomfortable with women being CEOs. And I think that comes from the idea of women being the domestic keeper. You know, women at the head of a clan or at the head of a community, that's natural. That feels natural because it's been ingrained for the last 20, 30,000 years. But a woman at the head of a nation having to deal with decisions that were typically made by men, like hunting. Hunting, which might be construed today and kind of rearranged as dealing with the empire, dealing with war, yeah, those type of things. Diplomacy, absolutely, because that was what women had always done. They were the ones who tried to keep peace between the different clans. When women could not keep the peace, then men would step in and say, okay, so how are we going to settle this? You know, but those things feel natural to many men. But the other ones where, you know, they're making decisions on war and what have you, don't feel natural. And instead of seriously coming out and demonizing men, and here, look, I'm a black male. I have every right in my mind to want to demonize white men. But at the same time, I have every right in my mind to want to demonize white females. What feminism is doing, what they're doing, is completely wrecking the home. There are different ways to go about bringing, you know, about equality, and demonizing men isn't the way. This is why feminists have such a hard time reaching, you know, Christian evangelical women. Why they have such a hard time of reaching Christians, period. Because you may think it is old-fashioned and non-useful, but the role of the home in a nation is important. It's the role of the cell in a body. The moment you start destroying the home, you start destroying the nation. You start destroying the culture. And that's why feminists can't reach them. It doesn't say that women are, and I used to get this confused when all I did was listen to progressives and liberals and all of this. It doesn't say that women are less than. That's the point. It ain't about women being less than. It's about saying that there has always been specific roles for each sex. The moment you start treading on them, that's when you start getting the most problems. Now, I'll give you a great example of this. If you look at the presidents of the United States leading up to FDR, the majority of them had very little domestic success. Very little domestic success. They were all about business. They were all about expansion and conquering and death and militarism and all of that. Why? Because traditionally, European life, men, that's what they did. That's what they knew how to do. They didn't understand the domestic avenue or the domestic structures of a society. That was a woman's job. That was a woman's job. FDR, though, came along and said, crap, we need to do something domestically. That's going to have international consequences, but we need to do something domestically. What did he do? Two of his primary advisors, during the Great Depression were women. And my God, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on her name. Oh, so horrible. But one of his chief architects for the New Deal was a woman. Which makes utter sense. Again, because the domestic structure is traditionally the European woman's domain. And she absolutely remade it. She remade it. If it wasn't for that energy, the United States would have not been in the position to build what turned out to be a prosperous extension of decades. And in fact, it was only when the country started going back to the male-based thinking logic of how to deal with the domestic issue, which that started with Reagan, some people say even Jimmy Carter, that's when you had it, that was your, you started running into problems again. That's when you started running into problems again. There's a time in need for everything. There's a time and need for everything. The problem with today's modern world is there's no great understanding of the gender roles. A lot of feminists, and I really don't care if you hate me for this, because this is the truth. You're too interested in power. You're too interested in power. This was a mistake that black folks made back in the 60s. We became too enamored by power. Instead of understanding what roles we needed to play in the society to build the type of community and national organization which we needed. We became too interested in power. Because everybody has a role in a nation. Everybody does. Everybody does. Now, sometimes those roles do need to be adjusted, need to be, you know, re-sculpted. We're at a moment in time where that's necessary. We are at a moment in time where that is necessary. But for women, this is even more spectacular, especially here I'm talking about European women, European American women. Because they're enamored with trying to be like men. They want to be in the position of men. That's not your strong suit. You're never going to be like a man because you're not man. Play to your strengths. Hillary Clinton, in 2018, ran a female-centric campaign. It was primarily about the domestic issues of the day and what needed to happen to secure the prosperity of that time period. When she ran in 2016, she ran a male-centric campaign, trying to be tough and hard and all this other stuff. That wasn't what was needed. Barack Obama literally set her up, and it took me a while to see this, but Barack Obama literally set her up to run the same campaign that she had ran in 2008 to victory in 2016. He had taken care of the international stuff. He had taken care, which is exactly what a European-American man would do. Now, Barack Obama, obviously, you're going to say, well, he's black. No. I like Baracky, but Baracky is definitely not in his mentality black. He is very much European, and that stands to reason. He was raised by white people, so he thinks and acts and moves and motivates like white people. That's epigenetics, y'all. That isn't me speaking. That's epigenetics. That said, though, he literally set the board up for her to run a domestic campaign. Hillary Clinton didn't do that because she was trying to be like a man. She was trying to be like a man. Bernie Sanders was able to outflank her because with socialism says you have to deal with the domestic first before you can deal with the international. Hillary Clinton was trying to be like a man. She wanted to be tough. She wanted to be hard. No. If she had ran domestically, like she had ran in 2008, she would have danced on the head of Donald Trump and left him bleeding in the corner. Now, you may think that's unfair. Get over it. Get over it. People are looking to women for answers domestically that they can't get from men. And because too many of these women are too interested in being like men, they can't answer the call. Now, obviously, you're going to say, well, wait a minute. Are you telling me that, like, women can't go to war? Women can't do this? Women can't do that? No. See, that's your own insecurities in your brain trying to get you to run away from who you actually are and the time period which you are living in. You want to know how you convince men that women can do more? The same way that men convince other men that they can do more. By doing what is asked of them first. What comes natural first. That's how you do it. Women keep trying to act like they're trying to become the head of a female debate club. No, if you're trying to win over men, okay? You win over men by proving that you fill that need first that they have, and then you can expand to show them that, yeah, I can do all this stuff too. That's what you do. Now, it's different in the black community than in the white community. But that goes for the white community. That's how you get them. The reason why I suspect most men, white men, do not believe women should be president is because the domestic nature of this country, with so many females in power at the local level, the state level, and the national level, the domestic state of the nation is in such destructive constraints that they don't feel that females are doing what they are supposed to do first, which is take care of the domestic. So if they can't take care of the domestic, how are they going to take care of the international? Now, obviously, there's things to be said about what role do men play in all this, but this is really something that is not talked about. Because if you start talking about it, then the hyper-feminists want to say, well, you're sexist, you hate women. Please. Please. Furthermore, I'll tell you one more thing, and then I'm going to have to get off of here. There was a discussion that was had, and I try to look at various viewpoints whenever I am contemplating something, ladies and gentlemen. There was a discussion that was had about a year and a half ago. No, I'm sorry. Wow. No. I found it again a year and a half ago. This discussion happened about 7 or 8 years ago, but I found it again a year and a half ago. And there was a suggestion that in the 1970s, feminism received a major boost by females who were predominantly homosexual. Now, the people who were talking about this were women, but they were black and brown women. And so one of the women brought up that this was an intriguing point, that there were a number of homosexual women who were pushing feminism, and that this presented a unique problem to feminism, because whatever philosophy you're talking about, the ends is always in the minds of the creator. So, if you have, at the beginning, feminists who were homosexual, meaning they were more interested in being with females than men, their ending is going to be dramatically different than the feminists who are interested in being with men and not females. Now, why is this important? This is important because we have to really talk about what is the end to feminism. And that's something that I don't hear people really talking about. What is the end to to feminism? Is feminism just meant to make women equal to men? Because I'm going to tell you, it's never going to happen. The moment you think that's going to happen, females will rise to the top and think that they're better than men. And I already see this somewhat happening in some of the videos that I'm finding on feminism and just the utter disgust for men. I can see the egos starting to pump up of women. So now, within a generation, you're going to have a nice, solid group of women who really think that they're better than men, but they won't say it. Just as 20 years ago, it was hard-pressed to find a lot of men of this generation, of my generation, who would say, oh, absolutely, I feel like I'm better than a woman. Oh, no. But they felt it. Like, inside, they felt it. We have to have a discussion. Is feminism is just about empowering women, what is the end to that empowerment? Where are you building it towards? Now, the great book that I just read called What the Eyes Don't See, read, honestly, I know you probably want to like read it, but if you can get the audiobook, the author read the audiobook, absolute man, just fantastic. She did a great job. But her empowerment is instructive. Her empowerment is instructive. Her empowerment is dramatically instructive. And it would change feminism if a person like her would actually talk more about that empowerment and where it came from. Absolutely would. Because it, her empowerment comes from generations. It comes from men, but also women. She doesn't deny her male side, and she doesn't simply embrace her female side. And this is part of the problem with a lot of feminist thought today, is it is about kicking out the male and firmly embracing the female. No society lives on one principle alone. You have both female and male energy. When men suppressed the female energy, it's kind of amazing, isn't it? Think about it. And I mean, there's other reasons why I think the Depression happened, but and I'm talking metaphysically here. But it's kind of amazing, isn't it? The women received the right to vote in what was it, 1921, 1M2, and I'm sorry, I've been doing some research on Prohibition. And so, you know, the numbers are sledging together. But women received the right to vote in that time period. And we then had a domestic crisis less than 10 years later. Now, I don't find that coincidence. There is no such thing as coincidence in the cosmos. There is no such thing as coincidence in the cosmos. Just as right after World War II, after labor helped to win the war, within 3 years, the Democratic Party, in alliance with the Republican Party, neutered the power of labor, which had really forced society to restructure itself. And I've often found it interesting that those who produce, we call it labor. Who produces? Who goes into labor? Females. Females. Women are being called forward to do an amazing restructuring domestically of the society. Men are also being called to reconfigure how we look at war and how we look at security, because that's what we've always done, among other things. We can't run from that. We cannot run from it. And I mean that. We cannot run from it. And specifically to the European American woman and man, you got to get in touch with who you are and who you are. You got to do that. Because that's going to be way more important going forward than these notions of men and female or male and female gender roles. With that, I'm going to call this. Ladies and gentlemen, I will talk with you another day. This is your brother, Brian Mayer Deez. By the way, I just want to answer one question, which is important. Why do I spend so much time talking about Europeans? Because that was asked, and it's a fair question. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, as a black male, as I said before, I could be angry and hateful towards Europeans for the rest of my life and have every reason to be. But here's the thing. There's a plan for you. The problem is nobody's talking to you about it. Nobody's talking to you about it. So I talk about Europeans because I want you to have a different vision of yourself. I need you to have a different vision of yourself because, look, having grown up with white folks, I know that the vision of white children fluctuates dramatically. Dramatically. And their real vision of themselves doesn't start to really take hold until about 13, 15. And then they still fight it up until their early 20s. A lot of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So there's a need now for a new vision. And that's why I do this. I will talk with you guys another day. Questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always leave them for me. This is your brother, Brian Mayer Deez. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun, or a brick, or a stone.